As you might remember, we've been studying the book of Koheles. The intention is, in our study of, also known as Ecclesiastes, if that's better for anyone, not better for me. The intention is that, though, if you ever miss a class, I'm trying to make each unit stand on its own. So it's like, it's not like if you miss one, you can't come to the next one because you understand what's happening. It's each one is its own unit. So we're up to the second unit of Kohelet. We just had an introduction. We did the first verse, Havel Havelim. Everything is vanity of vanities. And we did talk a little bit about how, like, sometimes the book seems depressing, but hopefully I'll show you. We'll see how this doesn't have to be seen as depressing. We also talked about how the word Kohelet, the name Kohelet, we know who wrote Kohelet? Remember? Shlomo HaMelech, King Solomon. But it doesn't have to be that it's, why? The question was, was it called Kohelet? All of his other books, by the way, say his name in it. Like, it says that he wrote it, but why, what's Kohelet? So we talked about the different periods of his life. Like, in some ways, he was makil kahilot. He brought together lots of people because he would give lectures and give talks, like in the hakel, also the same word, Kohelet, to thousands and tens of thousands of people. Everyone wanted to hear his wisdom. People came from all over the world. We know in the book of Malachim, it talks about the Queen of Sheba coming and others coming from far and wide to hear his wisdom. So on the one hand, he was very wise and brilliant. There's sheets in the back there. On the other hand, there was a time in his life where he was makil nedavot. He actually went door to door begging for money, the Midrash says, because things were so bad for him. So he's someone who had the greatest, he was makil in terms of, he had wealth and riches, he had great wisdom, and he also went through periods of life where he was very poor. So one of the things we talked about is how we'll look at some verses and see how it might imply, or we might be able to guess, what part of his life did he write this section. So let's read these few verses here, and then we'll look at commentaries. But first, I want to hear your opinions about this. So I'll read it. Let's read it, and then tell me what you think about this. Does this strike you as depressing, inspiring? What do you think he means by this? Is it relevant for our day and age? So here's what he says, chapter 1, starting with verse 3, Gimel. Ma yisron la'adam b'chol amalo shiyamot tachat ha'shemesh. What value is there for all of the hard work that we do beneath the sun? One generation comes, another one goes, and the earth is just there as each generation passes and people come and go. The sun rises, the sun sets. It just goes back to its place. It's just sunrise, sunset. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah.
There's a lot of songs, but we're going to see it. Sunrise. There's a lot of English songs. I mean, throughout the Tanakh, there's also Hebrew songs, but there's been a lot of famous songs that were written based on. So anyways, the sun rises, the sun sets, just goes back to its same place over and over again, the same pattern. Vav, holech el derom v'sovev el tzafon. It goes to the south, it goes to the north. Sovev, sovev, holech haruach v'sivotav shavaruach. And the wind just blows. It's also confusing, that verse, by the way. Is it talking about the sun going north and south, which doesn't really make sense, although in some ways it does, because it sets at different parts of the sky throughout the year. And also, but then it applies, it's the wind. It's not totally clear, is it the wind? But the wind doesn't blow north and south, and Israel blows east to west to east. But anyways, but the point is, it just kind of goes in its direction and goes back and forth. There's wind blowing, and it's just kind of all going. Kol nechalim hochim el hayam, and all the rivers are just flowing towards the sea. Vayam enin mo'aleh, but the sea never becomes full. El makom sha nechalim hochim, and it just kind of goes in the way that it flows. Sham heim shavim v'lechem, it just comes and goes, and the water's just going. It doesn't seem like there's any purpose. It's just water's just flowing, but it's never full. There's no point of it all. Kol ha-davarim yageim. Everything is just exhausting. Lo yuchal ish ledaber. No one can talk. Lo tishba ayin liros. And the eye never gets satisfied with seeing. Lo timale ozen mishmoa. And the ear never is completely heard. Mashaya hushiyeh. And that which was will be. Mashanase hushiyase. What happened will happen again. There's nothing new beneath the sun. And sometimes you say, hey, look, this is new. I found something new. Actually, nope. it happened before. Le'olamim asher hayam lefanino. It happened before us, we just forgot. Ein zichron, the Rishonim, we've totally forgotten. If we only would have historians and people that were dedicating their time to, you know, conserving the past. But ein zichron, the Rishonim, we forget what happened before us. Vegam la'achronim, and even the ones that were more recent. Shiu lo yeh lahem zichron im shiu la'achrona. And nothing's going to be remembered in the end. Eventually, even the things that didn't happen yet, they're going to be forgotten. That's it. So what's your impression of those verses? Is that, what do you think? What do you think hearing that or reading that?
Doesn't it contradict, like, the whole idea of teshuva is that you can change and you become new again, right?
Uh-huh.
And then it means that there's nothing new beneath the sun.
Okay, interesting. So does this contradict the idea of tshuva, of being able to repent, to be able to change things? That's very essential to Judaism, that we can change, and we can change things. And this seems to imply nothing's going to change.
Yeah, you've got to renew.
Right. Okay. Good. We'll talk about that. Good. Yes.
I feel like the first three psukim are kind of either neutral or optimistic, right?
Uh-huh.
There's something kind of satisfying and reliable about the fact that the world doesn't change and like it follows a set pattern and
yes.
things like that. But then when we get to pasuk chet, it shifts to kind of the human perspective,
uh-huh.
and like these things are not reassuring at all. Because
uh-huh.
it's just all the same.
Uh-huh, interesting. Right, it doesn't sound as depressing at first, but then it gets
right.
a little bit...
Right.
Yeah, okay. Interesting. Any other reactions to it? Any reactions? Yeah.
It's not speaking of spiritual things, it's speaking of physical things.
Well, that could be. We'll talk about that also. This seems to be very physical. It's just about the wind. In fact, the Ibn Ezra writes, we won't read it inside, but the Ibn Ezra writes that if you look at it, the four elements... which is a very common way of parsing out the world. This has all four elements of nature: earth, air, fire, and water. They're all mentioned there.
Right.
And it seems to be implying that just like the four elements just kind of have a natural order, so too humans have this natural order. But you're right, there's no like spiritual...
Yeah, I mean, it's like the physical world is this, so now I'm waiting for the next shoe to drop. And then
uh-huh.
spiritually we get to go beyond this.
Okay, we'll talk... Yes, good. Okay, we're going to talk about that.
Yeah.
Very good. Any other reactions? What do you mean?
Like the wind is like the spirit.
Oh, yeah, okay. Like the wind, ruach is the nesham, is the soul. Okay. Well, we're going to see that. That's what the rabbis do with it, kind of. Yeah.
Well, I mean, since I'm an ecologist, just as nature goes in circles every year.
Yeah.
I mean, even Jewish cycle every year, reading the Torah.
Right.
When we start over.
Right.
So nature spiritually starts over again in the spring, and there's new regrowth.
Yeah.
So whatever... issues, negatives, there were, the plants start over again. So for uh-huh. us also, we can do tshuva,
uh-huh.
start over again each year.
There's a cycle to nature, there's a cycle to humanity, to our lives. Interesting. Yes, good.
And maybe it's saying the gains are not the point.
Uh-huh.
Like what you get out of this is not the point, it's the...
Just be happy with where you are. Although he doesn't seem so happy, right, the journey, he seems depressed by that. There seems like the journey is pointless. Just like the streams fill up the ocean, but the ocean never fills up, and it's like, where are we all going? What's the point of it all? But, okay, I hear you. Yeah.
But you still have experience in it. And
right.
you're choosing this particular
point. Right. Okay, good. Yeah. So, the truth is, I mean, it does depend on how you read it. First of all, just look at the very first verse. Ma yitron adam b'chol amalo already seems to imply a little bit like, what's the point of all of our hard work? Where is it all going? Though you could argue that like amal, there's a lot of words we could have used for like, for the what's the point of all of our activities. Amal tends to, in Tanakh, tends to imply like drudgery, hard work, suffering. It also, remember, we talked about a theory last week about a commentary that argues that the whole Kohelet was trying to go into Adam Harishon's mind and try to argue what was it like for him. And it's like actually all a commentary, and he's using the word amal as like Adam asking like what's the point of the work. He was it's like a discovery process, but maybe it's not talking about everything in life, just what's categorized as amal. But as some of you pointed out already, the rabbis, when they read this, they take it very symbolic. They read it totally differently. Let's look at a few commentaries amongst the rabbis. So first thing I put there was the Gemara Talmud and Gittin, Samaches Amud Aleph. where he actually talks about this, what we discussed at the beginning, about what point of Shlomo's life was this written in. And there is a midrash which says, "Bishah shedachu Ashmadai." There was Ashmadai. Anyone know who Ashmadai was? Like the king of the demons. Yeah. So it's obviously come as something meant something symbolic or something. But when Shlomo HaMelech sinned, he did made all kinds of mistakes, and that's when his has his downfall. So the rabbis understood that as being like some kind of demon that pushed him off his throne. So he says, "Bishah shedachu Ashmadai the Shlomo Mikiso." Arba meos parsai, he banished him, 400 parsaim, parsangs, whatever. Al osto sha'amar, that's the moment when he said, ma'yusun adam b'chol malo. He realized, I said, I achieved so much, I accomplished so much, I earned so much, I did so much, and now I've lost it all. What was the point of all that I did? So it's his way of looking back on his life after he failed and like lost it. Like imagine someone has an amazing life, does so much, but then at the end they lose it all, and then they're like, what was the point of it all? Because the Tanakh implies it's because of his sins. He said, you know, you weren't supposed to have too many horses or too many wives, and he did all those things. He thought he could outsmart the reasons the Torah prohibited it, but then he ended up being involved with idolatry because some of his wives brought it in, and then the downfall is really bad when you know there's a civil war after his son takes over. Like the first 40 years of Shlomo's reign seemed to be very good, and then the Tanakh implies after that there was a civil war, and there were attacks from outside and inside, and all kinds of things just kind of broke down in his rule. And as the phrase that the Torah Tumim uses here, it says, "Vaya navanad ba'olam," he became like a wanderer in the world. So it's someone who had everything, literally had everything. He even grew up in the king's house, as we'll talk about. Like he was born and raised to be a king, and it all fell apart. Let's talk for a minute about the phrase "under the sun." This phrase, Tachat HaShemesh, comes up 29 times in the Book of Qehelet. It's a theme. It's one of the themes of the book. There's a lot of different interpretations of it. A lot argue, like I saw in one sefer that I didn't put on the sheet, but it said like, after, you know, remember, he was also very wise. He was known for being very wise. So after one discovery, apparently, they argue that one of his discoveries, he thought, I came up with something new. I found something new. And then he realized, also with his wisdom, oh no, this isn't new. It already exists. Like, I thought it was something new, and I realized it wasn't. Which is true in many things today. I mean, so many things like we find in medicine and scientific research that we think that they're new, but they're actually based on earlier things. The truth is, I was just the other day listening, you know, I put on Rabbi Levi Meir's lectures on YU Torah, which he gave right here for many, many years, 30 years ago, those lectures that I put online, and I listened to them. And every now and then there'll be something that we're working on here, whether it's, in our chaplaincy department or in medical ethics or something that we think is so innovative and new. And then I'll listen to a lecture that he gave in 1992 and he's talking about it. I'm trying to remember examples, but something, and I'm like, wow, I thought we were doing stuff that's new. It's like, we just didn't know that they've been dealing with this in literally the same room, 30 years ago, but that's part of Tachat. So let's look at some commentaries, Tachat HaShemesh. One of the things we'll look at in the English, Michael Fox is the JPS Bible commentary. It's a very good commentary. So he writes, "Beneath the sun is for emphasis. Without implying anything other than realism, then its purpose would be to emphasize the universality of Qehelet's claim within the sphere he examines, namely the world that humans inhabit." It's a way of saying the entire world. He's just saying Tachat HaShemesh means the entire world. Fine. But there's some the rabbis took this much more metaphorically. So for example, look at the Ibn Ezra on page 2. The Ibn Ezra says, "Inyan Tachat HaShemesh hu hazman mitafech ki hashemesh levado yolid hazman." It means in the time. The sun is what causes time. I mean, if you want to say it in that way, our orbit of the sun. But the sun is what gives us both days and seasons, our relation to the sun. So he's saying, just like the sun gives us time, so too, therefore, ki ayom tali b'shemesh me'et darachov yad bo'o, the sun creates the days and the seasons. And so what he means, Qehelet means when he says nothing's new under the sun, he means in the time, the times, and that kind of fits in with the context of these verses. Rashi says, no, it's totally metaphorical. He says, Tmurat HaTorah Shehi Kruya Or. Tachat, another translation of Tachat, Tachat really means under. But Tachat can also mean, what's Tmurat mean? Instead of. Ein chadash tachad haShemesh. Nothing new in place of the sun. And what's the sun? What's the ultimate source of light? The Torah. So Rashi's reading us saying, he's saying, if you try to do something, give something importance besides from the Torah, then it's worthless. But if you focus on what's really important, it's not. It's not worthless. That's his argument. In fact, that's based on the Gemara. The Gemara here in Shabbos Daf Lamed Amud Beis 30b says, Amar of Yehuda Brei Derev Shmuel Bar Shilat Mishmei Derev Bikshu Chacham Lignos Sefer Koheles. As some of you already pointed out, it seems to be, first of all, there's what's the word in English? Stira. Someone help me. Contradictions, and there's implied heresy in the book of Koheles, so the rabbis wanted to get rid of it. They wanted to completely destroy the book. Mipnei ma lo ganzu, why did they keep it? Mipnei shtchilasu divrei Torah, v'sofu divrei Torah, because it begins with Torah and it ends with Torah. We know the ending of the book of Koheles is all about, you know, what's the point of life? Just study Torah and make the most of it. We'll get there and we'll discuss it. How is the beginning about Torah? So it says the beginning is about Torah because it says, ma yisro na'adam b'chol amalo shi'amol tachat ha-shemesh, as we just read. What's the point of all the work we do under the sun? V'imre divei rebi yonai tachat ha-shemesh hu de'ein lo. No, under the sun, yeah, that's true. There's no point. Kodem ha-shemesh yeshto. Before the sun. What's before the sun? What existed before the sun? Before creation. So if you take the Midrash seriously, which said that before the sun, the world, Torah was created before the world. So what it means is the things that existed before the sun existed, that has value. There's only one thing that existed before the sun existed. Basically, I mean, the planet existed, but that is the Torah. That's based on the Gemara Pesachim that says that the Torah was written lifnei kadosh baruch o terem nivra olam. And by the way, there's a lot of midrashim that say the same thing. So like in the Vayikra, the next source there, just look at the last line. It says lo amar bechol amal ela bechol amalo. So why does it say amalo and not amal? But amalo eno mo'il. When, you know, just work that's pointless, that's no good. Aval mo'il hu ba'ameila shel Torah, but when you work in Torah, then it has value. You could also read this, by the way, saying much broader than Torah, and saying work that's just busy work is, there's no ultimate point. But when you're doing work, like for example, work people do here in a hospital, when it's ultimately to advance science or help people or educate people, when it's doing something that's like making the world a better place, you know, that's why it's so great working for a nonprofit organization where like people are dedicating their lives to making the world a better place. That's not amalo. That's not just busy work. That's work that makes the world better, and that's not pointless.
Uh-huh. Like idol worship, that was a physical thing, uh-huh, that sort of diminished the notion of God, which is, you know, not seen.
Okay, and the sun, you're saying, is we can see because of the sun.
And all of the physical.
But you can see the things, that there's nothing under the sun has value. He's saying everything under the sun is pointless, but you can see it, everything under the sun.
Right, but the point he's saying to me is that where the true value in life is that which we do not see.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
That which is not,
you can only see the things under the sun. That has no, interesting. Right, but above the sun, well, actually, that's, so look at the very next commentary, the line underlined there in the Pesik to the Rav Kahane, says, Amar Rav Yudin, Tachat HaShemesh Ein Lo. Under the sun, there's no value. Lamala Min HaShemesh, Yeshto. But above the sun, there is. So he's arguing there that means Torah. Torah is the only thing above the sun, but you could say it's anything that's just beyond the physical realm that we can't see because the sun, yeah, that's very good. I like that. That's cool.
You know, family, yeah. Love, all these things are not quantum. They're not physical. They don't have physical.
Right. Very good. Paula.
I just wondered if it possibly harkens back to the historic time of creation to Bereshit, since you already always talk about the sun. At the beginning, work was not really part of it, right? Only after Adam and Hava.
Yes.
Then you have the idea of what sort of your gravity is.
Yes. Excellent. Which is exactly what we were saying 1 minute before you got here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But you said it much better, so I'm glad you said it, because you said you're more articulate than me. No, but that's true. Yes, that's one theory, that this is referring to the, you know, Adam before the sin. Yeah. Or after the sin, actually, before, once he was confused. Very good. Yes, so I'm glad you said that, because
everything's the time.
See, there's nothing new. I thought I said something new. Said this isn't me new, and it wasn't new. Someone said it in here 10 minutes ago. And probably 30 years ago, also Rabbi Meir, I'm sure, said it multiple times. Right? Yes. Okay, let's go to the next verse. Let's go through a few, and then I want to show you, I'm going to share with you a theory about this whole section that I just found so beautiful. Professor Grossman, who I'm just infatuated with right now, his writing, has just a way of understanding this whole thing. But let's look at a few more. So we saw one way of reading it is that it's about all about the Torah. The next verse, it said, Dor holeich v'dor ba v'aretz l'olam omedes. One generation goes, next generation comes, and the earth just stands. It's just the same earth populated by new people. Rashi says, Kol masha rasha yigav amala shok ligzol, that which bad people do to steal, to oppress others, eno mivlat. There's no profit from it. Et masav ki hador holeich v'dor acher ba v'nota kol miyad banav. He's saying, it's saying to bad people, don't steal, because ultimately justice will happen. And if you steal it from someone else, ultimately it's going to get stolen back from your descendants. That's how Rashi reads it. Yes?
Maybe just the word I meant, everything seems to relate to Rashi. This reminds me of the story of Noah, the idea that there's terrible things happening at the sun and a door will exist. The generation is wiped out.
Oh, very good.
It seems to me it echoes that.
Yeah, cool. Yes, I see that.
Why didn't
yeah. What?
Why didn't this talk about God at all?
Well, that's an interesting question about Kohelis. It's not really a theological discussion about God so much as it's more just like ruminations on life and society. But there is, I mean, that's going to be the last, very last verse of the whole book. I don't want to give away the ending, but that's why the rabbis brought God into it so much. But you're right, it's not so much a theological book as it's just more like a, you know, that's why we call it wisdom literature, but it's just like ruminations. Look at the next verse. So he says, so you should be, Yehei Beinecha, Kol dor sheba b'yemecha v'chol chacham shebimecha k'dor sheholach k'chamim harishonim sh'ayu lefanecha. He's saying, it could be another positive way to look at it, is that you should see in your eyes everyone that's in your generation as, you know, we sometimes look at the past generations as if they were so much better than us, and things were so much greater, and the people were so much wiser and smarter, and if we only had those people, things would be better now. But you should look at people now as if they were in those generations. Things are, you know, see people in your generation as if they are from the previous generations. Respect them now, just like so often people become more respected once they're gone, but cherish them while they're still alive. That's why, that's just like what the Torah says in Parsha Shoftim. You're supposed to go to the judge in your generation. Respect those in your generation, just like as if they were from the previous generation. Were you going to say something?
Or making the world a better place, which is something you could define. What does that mean? Making the world a better place?
Right. But he's kind of saying that it's like it's all pointless.
Well, no, but see, but I'm reading that as saying that which Judaism tells us is the point, rather than what he's saying, which is his power, his position, what he's lost. You know, all
okay,
that
very good.
Stuff,
good.
You know, was a fruit.
Yes, it's fleeting, right.
He feels the absence of that.
Yes.
Rather than the
good.
Of the other stuff.
Good. We're going to come back to that. You're right. I like where you're going with it. Good. Let's look at a couple more commentaries, and I want to share with you the kind of theory of the whole. So then Pasuk Hey, it said, Vazarach Hashemesh Uvah Hashemesh V'amakom Shoef Vazarach Husham. The sun just, sunrise, sunset, and just goes on its merry way. So this, the rabbis took upon this one as saying, you know, I remember I was once at a funeral, actually, of a great rabbi, and one rabbi got up and he goes, I thought this was a strange thing to say, but, and now I didn't know where he was getting it from. He got up and he goes, well, Zarach HaShemesh, Uba HaShemesh, the sun rises, sun sets, he was a great rabbi, and now we'll have other great rabbis. I was just like, I don't know, it seems a little bit not compassionate, but he was like, he was great, but don't worry, we'll have other great rabbis. And then they'll die and we'll have other great rabbis after. So anyways, his point was, though, that is what the commentaries say. Look at Torah Tmima here. He says, Amar of Abba Bar Kahana, V'chi ein anu yodim, Shazarach HaShemesh, Shabbat HaShemesh, didn't we already know the sun rises and sunsets? Umatam alomar, ela lomar lecha, it's telling you, Ad shelo yishka shimsho shel tzadik zeh, before the sun sets for this righteous person, Mazriach shimsho shel tzadik acher. Another tzadik will be born, and their sun will start to shine. Ashlo yishkia shimsho shel Sarah. For example, before Sarah died, Zarcha shimsha shel Rivka. Rivka was already born. By the way, I love that the one example they give of a tzadik is a woman. But before Sarah died already, there was Rivka as the next. So what it means is sunrise, sunset is a positive way of looking at it, that there's a sun kind of leading us, and that sun goes, another one is coming. A different sun, so to speak, but it will give us light. The Gemara says this in Yoma here, Lamed Ches. It says, Ein tzadik nifra min ha'olam ad shenivra tzadik kemoso. Another tzadik will live. Or Gemara elsewhere in Kedushin says, Rabbi Kiva nolad, kishemes Rabbi Kiva nolad Rabbi. When Rabbi Kiva died, Rabbi was born. Kishemes Rabbi, when Rabbi died, nolad Rabbi Huda. Rabbi Huda was born. So there's constantly this pattern of the next great person coming. So it's another positive way the rabbis read it. Next verse. Holech el derom v'sovev al tzafon, sovev holech haruach v'el sivosav shavaruach. It's just going in every direction. The wind is blowing. It goes towards the south, veers towards the north. The wind goes around and around and around. The wind turns. Fox says it means even the wind, which seems to go aimlessly, it's all following this path. Or just the sun goes and, you know, really the sun goes in that direction. What page is this? 3, 4. So the next verse. I'm going to do a few more with you, and then I'm going to give you the overall. Pasuk Zayin. Kol ha-nechalim holchim el hayam. All of the streams flow to the sea. V'hayam ininu maleh, but the sea is never full. El makom sha-nechalim holchim sham heim shavim lelechas. And to the place which they flow, the streams flow back again. What is this talking about? Fox says it just means the rivers never fill up, the sea completely. The sea always takes more water. Kohel chooses to regard this as an example of frustrated efforts rather than as an accomplishment, I mean, as an accomplishment, sorry, I have a lot of typos in there, or a process of renewal. This is where the Ibn Ezra points out that this is one of the four, in that piece there, the four different types of matter. But look at the Midrash here. I thought this Midrash was interesting. He says, what does it mean when it said, Kol ha-nechalim hochim el hayam, in the middle of the page there, the Midrash Zuta? It says, when it says that all the streams flow to the sea, but the sea is never full, he gives like five different possibilities of what that could be. He says, Zeh ha-lev, that's the heart. Kol ha-torah kula ina nechneses ela lelev. All the Torah goes to your heart, Vayam inu maleh, but it never fills up. There's no, you can always learn more Torah, and that's what it means. Or the next theory, Davar Acher, Kol Nechlim, it says, is Kol Chachma inu nechnas el lev. It's all the wisdom, all the intelligence, all the wisdom. We can never be full, even if we try to gain all the wisdom. Or he says it could be Kol HaMesim. This is kind of what someone was referring to before. It's all the dead. Where the dead go? Kol ha-mesim einam hochim ela l'sha'ul. There's a place that we don't really know what it means exactly. Sha'ul means like the place where the souls go. The Torah, the Bible refers to it a few times. All the souls go there, to this place where the souls go. V'hayam eininu maleh v'shol einu mitmaleh. But this place of the souls never fills up. And then the end of the piece says, El makom sh'anachim hochim, makom sh'nefashos miskapsim ba'olam hazeh. The place in this world where all the souls gather. Umisham heim asidim lomar shira leolam haba, and that's the place where eventually they will sing to God. They're all there now. It's some place apparently, according to this perspective, and they all fill up. And when everyone dies, their soul goes there, but it doesn't get full. There's always more room for more souls. Interesting, no? Or it could be Yerushalayim. Everyone goes to Yerushalayim. There's always room. That was the famous midrash. Everyone fits in Yerushalayim. Or it's Mammon. Look what he says, this one. It's money. Does it mean that we can never have enough money? No, that's not what it means. He's going to talk about money a lot in this book. It's funny coming from a king, but he says, Hamamon eino ola ela lamalchus. All of our money goes to the king. All of our taxes. And the king seems to never be satisfied with it. We always have to give more and more. It's interesting coming from the king himself, and he's like, you give me all your money, and it's never enough. I was going to show you a few more, and then because I want to share with you, I want to close up. I want to share with you the Professor Grossman's perspective. So then we said pasuk ches kol devarim yegeim lo yuchal ish ledaber lo tishba ayin liros lo timali ozen mishmoa. All things are wearisome. No one can ever state them. The eye has never had enough seeing, nor the ear enough hearing. Fox sees this as being just as the appetite for wealth is never sated by amassing possessions, so is human desire for understanding never satisfied by sensory data. Rashi says here it's Most of all, Ma Yisron Imachalif Hu Esaka Torah Ledavar B'Devarim B'Teilim. What this is talking about is if you get involved, if you trade Torah for Devarim B'Teilim, for idle pursuits. In fact, the Gemara, it's based on this Gemara in Yuma here in Daf Yates, it says, it actually gives us as a source that you're supposed to spend all your time learning Torah. So it says, Hasach Sichat Hulin Over Baseh. If you talk about mundane matters, you have to decide what you mean by mundane matters, because a lot of things are not mundane. But mundane matters, you violate the Torah prohibition, Torah requirement is Vidibarta Bam. Bam, the Var Mechem. You're supposed to talk about Torah and not other things. Rav Acha bar Rav Yaakov Amar over Belav. You actually violate a prohibition when you talk about mundane matters. What's the prohibition? This verse. Kol Devarim Yegeim Lo Yuchal Ish Ledaber. You're not supposed to talk about anything but Torah. I think we can expand on what Torah means. Things that are meaningful, relevant, important. Obviously not gossip and belittling other people. Okay, a couple more psukim. Mashihaya hushiyihye. That which was, always will be. Mashinase hushiyase ve'ein kol chadash tachas Hashemesh. There's nothing new. Everything is just a repeat. So Rashi says there, b'chol mashu lameid b'davar shu chalifei Hashemesh. Anything that you learn that's not Torah, that's not relevant, that is just a repetition. Ibn Ezra says it's olam shelamala ve'olam shelamata omed al derech echad ve'ein kol chadash. If you're talking about this world, there's nothing new, but in the world to come, there are things new. A last interpretation on the bottom of the page there, the fishet safa koheles beruach hakodesh. This is the psikta that Zutrasa. Koheles knew in his prophecy she'ein schar hamitzvos olam hazeh amar hakol kasher lakol. There's no reward in this world, so he's talking about in this world. A few of you have mentioned this. In this world, there's nothing new. But in the world to come, that's when there will be something new. That's when there's the ultimate reward and punishment. And finally, on the last page, I just want to show you two of these interpretations, and then we'll conclude. He had a piece there. The Sifri says that verse actually quoted Mordechai. Mag'ula nasi sal yedei ish Yehudi. This verse was talking about how it's going to be in the future the same as it was, just like Mordechai Ish Yehudi saved the Jewish people, so too there will be some Mordechai Ish Yehudi that will save the Jewish people in the future. Or just like we were, the Midrash there says, just like we were taken out of Egypt on Ananei HaKavod, on clouds of glory, so too we'll be taken out of this Galus in clouds of glory. Or the Midrash Tehillim there says, nothing is new. What it means is, it means Mahu Matir Asurim Yesh Omrim Kol HaBehema Shenitmeis Be'olam Hazeh Metaros HaKadosh Baruch Hu Lasid Lavo. Anything that's not kosher now will become kosher because it will return to how it was. At one time, everything was kosher until the Torah made it not kosher. So everything that's not kosher is going to one day become kosher again. That's another interpretation of it. Finally, the last verses there, it says Yesh Devar Shiyomar Re'ezeh Chadash. You look and say, look, this is new. But the truth is, we're going to find out that it's not new. And this, the Rashi there says, "Elish ein zichron rishonim lekach dom liyos chadash." It's just the problem is nothing's new; it just all appears new because we forget the past. That's our big problem: is that we forget too much, and everything that even the Vayikra Rabba there says there, even anything that any rabbi says that they think is new and a new idea. Moshe said it. Already Moshe Rabbeinu said that, and it's not new. No one can come up with anything new. Moshe said it all already. But I want to share with you now the theory that Professor Yonatan Grossman said. This whole thing, if you just go back to the first page now, you have all the verses in front of you. So he points out a few fascinating things. First of all, if you notice, I didn't point it out, but there's a word that comes up constantly. Holeich. Look at Pasuk Dalet, for example. Dor holeich v'dor ba. And then just keep going down. Pasuk Vav. Holeich el derom v'sovev el tzafon. Pasuk Zayin. Kol nechalim hochim. Constantly have the word holeich. Six times. In this little paragraph, six times the word holeich. But it should have happened one more time. Look at the Pasuk where it says about the sun. V'zarach ha-shemesh u'ba ha-shemesh vel makomo sho'eif. How could you have said that verse? Why didn't it just say It says El Makomo Shoeif. It should have just said El Makomo Holeich. It should just say Leich Veshuv. That would have been a much simpler way to say it. So, first of all, there is a pattern within the Tanakh, the whole Tanakh, and the truth is, he argues, and it's an interesting footnote, that a lot of ancient Near Eastern literature, this is true, this pattern, a pattern of sixes. Six represents, actually, let's think of what are some things that are six in the Tanakh, and think if you can see what it represents. What are sixes? What's
days of creation?
6 days of creation. What else was six? Well, if it's just like days of creation, the Shemitah cycle, 6 years of work. The Mishnah, yeah?
Yeah, no, it's the thing. You always think of seven.
Usually we think of seven. Seven's creation, seven's completeness.
Yeah.
And eight, there's one above. But what's six? Six is the days of work, the years of work, the arms of a menorah, the work, speaking of work, Eved Kanani, servants. How many years did they work and then they had to be set free?
6 years.
Okay, 6-point star. Interesting. I didn't think of that one. So the 600,000 Jews that left Egypt. The menorah, six points. The seraphim in Yeshayahu says it had 6 wings. The choshen, the breastplate, it had 3 in Yeshayahu. It had 6. Even though ultimately it had 12, but the way it was, it had 3 on each shoulder. What did 6 represent? So he argues that 6 represented sort of a harmonious, closed set. Like, it's just the patterns of nature. So sun, he argues, if you're reading it with that in mind, then when it says Vazarach HaShemesh, it's clearly separating the sun. The sun is like a different unit. It's making you notice that the sun is the anomaly because it's seen as like being the extent of this world. It's further than we can go. So the sun is like the limit, and everything else that's under the sun, everything you can see, is what we're talking about here. Then the verse gives you the impression that everything's moving quickly. Everything's passing nature, the generations. What's it all for? So he's trying to argue that Kohelis points out that nature's going in a cycle. So his concern is our life just going the way nature is going, just in that same cycle? Is it just nature, or is it something meaningful? But we seem to get stuck in this cycle of nature. So he says that seems like it's very pessimistic. But if you think about it, it can be very comforting as well in a few ways. Number one is that, first of all, there's a comfort in knowing that like the sun will rise again. That he points out, the Midrash, speaking of Adam, there's a midrash that says when the sun set the first time, Adam became desperately depressed and shocked and horrified. What's going to happen? How can we live without the sun? I can't see anything. He got so scared and he was like freaking out until the next morning. The sun rose and he said, oh, okay, it comes back. It's okay. It's going to be okay. Just sort of like the cycle of life. Some like the cycle of things. When things are bad, remembering that like there's a cycle, things are going to be okay, we're going to get through this, like we've been there before, like all the stuff we just said about we've been there before, nothing is new. As depressing as it is, it's also very comforting. We've been there before, so therefore we can do it. In fact, he shows, and I'll wrap up now, in Eov, when Eov is saying all of his, you know, how horrible things are and how unfair it is. When God finally starts to give the answer that, like, don't worry, things make sense. So in Eov, it says, there's a whole long piece, I'll just read you 2 lines. La'asos l'ruach mishkal mayim tikein b'midah. God has made the wind blow in its order and the water flows in its order. And there's laws of nature that the world flows. Don't worry, God is in control. There's a reason, a rhyme and a reason for everything. God's in control, and it's much deeper and more complex than you can understand. That's the whole answer to Eov. But he shows how like there's a parallel between what Kohelis is saying here and what Eov was told to comfort him. Like there's a comfort in the patterns of nature, but more than that, in Tehillim, and I'm not going to read it right now, but because we're out of time, but in Baruch Hinafshi, in the chapter of Tehillim that we read, for example, on Rosh Chodesh, the whole chapter of Tehillim is about the cycles of nature, but there it's praising God for the cycles of nature. So he also points out that you see, like, there we praise God for the cycles of nature. Shlomo Melech part of the difference is, we talked about this at the beginning, David was a king who struggled in life, who had to earn and work hard to achieve things. Shlomo Melech was born with it. And there's a big difference between when you have to earn something and then you're very happy with what you have, with what you've achieved. You can just look at it and praise God. Whereas when you grow up with a silver spoon, so to speak, and it's just all there, Shlomo's kind of saying, like, for me, I didn't have to earn it. I didn't have to achieve it. So I don't get the value in it the way that my father did. And it's trying to show you, like, the innocent second generation, sometimes you don't have the same struggles sometimes. And in general, the Book of Psalms, the point of it is praising God. The point of the Book of Qoheles is to kind of examine humans' role in the world. But to me, this his analysis kind of saves this whole section and shows you how it's comforting also. And it has a broader point to make. And so it's something very special about what Qoheles is doing, that he's it's and how it's connected to both Tehillim and Iov in a, I think, a profound way. I feel bad that we've gone over time, so let's officially...